This audio file is the first of several about the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966. The National Historic Preservation Act, or NHPA, is the single most important historic preservation law in the United States. As you've already seen, there are several federal laws that speak to or affect the practice of archaeology in the United States. And there are others that we will look at after we discuss the National Historic Preservation Act. But of all of them, the National Historic Preservation Act is the most comprehensive, and as such, it is responsible for the largest amount of archaeological work that is performed in compliance with preservation laws in general. Therefore, it is absolutely essential to understand it in order to understand why, how, where, and when archaeological work is performed in the preservation process in the United States. In other words, if you have a job as a professional archaeologist in the United States, you have to understand the National Historic Preservation Act in order to understand what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, and how you're supposed to do it. As I said, the National Historic Preservation Act was first passed in 1966. It's been amended a number of times, including major amendments that were passed in 1980 and 1992. It was passed in the 1960s in part as a reaction to extensive urban renewal programs that were going on across the United States. If you know anything about the history or you're as old as I am, you'll realize that in part because of the changing industrial base of the United States, changing demographics, and also white flight from the inner city to the suburbs, the central cities in many parts of the United States, particularly in the Northeast Midwest of the United States, the so-called Rust Belt, were suffering and were in some cases partly abandoned. And as a part of the both intellectual and social ferment of the 1960s, it was decided in many cases to knock down all the old buildings in the centers of American cities and replace them with new, modular or avant-garde constructions, which in some cases have not really stood the aesthetic test of time. But at any rate, there was a lot of buildings being razed and replaced in the cities in the United States in the 1960s. Among there were several really key events that helped lead to the passage of the National Historic Preservation Act, one of which was the destruction of Penn Station around 8th Avenue and 34th Street in New York City. You may not know this, even if you're from New York City, but Penn Station used to be an enormous and distinctive architectural monument, as large as and as beautiful as Grand Central Station is today. But in the early 1960s, I think around 1963, it was knocked down over the protests of a lot of New Yorkers, including very prominent New Yorkers like the widow of John F. Kennedy. And that event and events like it provided some of the impetus for the passage of the National Historic Preservation Act, which for the first time provided some recourse to preservationists who wished to seek to preserve important architectural and historical monuments. As the landmark and sort of keystone preservation legislation in the United States, the National Historic Preservation Act is a relatively long and complicated piece of legislation. It's much longer and more complicated than the ones we've looked at so far. You'll remember that the Antiquities Act only is, what, one page long, and the Historic Sites Act is two pages long. Well, the National Historic Preservation Act is on the order of 40 or 50 pages long, and it also has a number of associated regulations, which themselves in some cases are 20 or 30 or 40 pages long. It is therefore too long for us to review in great legal detail. You know, we can't do a legal analysis of the whole document and its regulations. But I want to review some of the most important passages, very briefly, and then we'll analyze and study two or three parts in more detail. Obviously, those will be the parts that are most relevant to understanding how, why, where, and when archaeological research is done in the United States. So, turning to the next page, let's just talk about some of the more important provisions very briefly. In Title I, Section 101 establishes the National Register of Historic Places. The National Register of Historic Places is very important in the process of determining whether or not archaeological sites are significant or not. It also provides for the Secretary of the Interior to issue regulations governing the National Register of Historic Places. Section 101 also establishes state historic preservation programs. This is very important because state historic preservation programs play a very important, indeed a key role, in the administration of archaeology and historic preservation at the federal level. They are what is called a mandatory or they are a mandatory consulting party during the Section 106 consultation process, which I'll explain later. It also provides for the federal government to help fund state and tribal historic preservation programs. And so, you know, in part, the National Historic Preservation Act creates an unfunded mandate for states to do stuff. In other words, it requires states to do stuff in order to comply with the federal law. Historic preservation grants help defray part of the cost of that for states. And they can also defray part of the cost of that for federally recognized American Indian tribes, who play a role in the process that in some cases is similar to that of states. Section 101 also creates the provides for the certification of local governments that wish to take part in the federal preservation program. Local governments can pass their own preservation ordinances and thereby escape some of the bureaucratic obligations of the National Historic Preservation Act. And it's this section that provides the mechanism for states to certify that local governments, certain local governments, are actually doing this properly. Finally, Section 101 also establishes the tribal historic preservation programs. And tribal historic preservation programs have been growing more significant in recent years. They've been spreading. It's a relatively new part of the law, but they've been spreading pretty rapidly. Many federally recognized American Indian tribes now have their own tribal historic preservation programs, and it's this section that provides the criteria and the legal context in which those programs are developed and establishes the qualities they must have and how they have to be set up. Section 106 is the single most important provision of this law for practicing professional archaeologists. It basically requires that federal agencies take into account the effects of their undertakings on historic properties and provide the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation an opportunity to comment on them. We will discuss this in much greater detail in the next few minutes. Section 110 requires federal agencies to establish a historic preservation program. This is also a fairly important part of the law for practicing professional archaeologists, and we'll discuss it a little more in a bit. As part of the requirement that federal agencies establish a historic preservation program, Section 110 requires federal agencies to appoint federal preservation officers. And federal preservation officers play an important statutory role in the preservation process. Section 112 provides for the Secretary of the Interior to establish professional standards for archaeologists, architectural historians, and other preservation professionals who are engaged in the preservation process in the federal, under these federal laws. It also requires federal agencies to maintain records and databases of their work that include, archaeological data and maps and things like that. I have to say, federal agencies vary considerably in their compliance with this requirement. Some federal agencies are very meticulous about maintaining and disseminating this information, whereas other federal agencies are not. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that Title II of the National Historic Preservation Act establishes and organizes the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation as an independent federal agency. It requires a lot of legal verbiage to create a federal agency, and Title II does this, which is one reason why it's so long. You know, in order to create a federal agency, you have to determine, like, what authority it has and what responsibilities it has and who sits in it, who sits on it, and how they get paid, and like, you know, on and on and on and on and on. And so it's a relatively long section, but that one section there does create this Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, which it plays a key role in administering Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, which is the section that is the most important one for us in this discussion. Section 304 provides for the confidentiality, in other words, maintaining the secrecy of archaeological site locations, and exempts them from the Freedom of Information Act to protect them from looting. That's a very important provision that also occurs in other laws in somewhat different wording, but you need to remember that. Finally, Section 401 provides for the United States' participation in ICOMOS, the International Council on Monuments and Sites, and also UNESCO's World Heritage Sites Program. And Title IV establishes the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training in Natchitoches, Louisiana. And they provide grants for certain kinds of scholarly and scientific studies in preservation. I invite you to try to figure out why the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training is located in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and come in and try to explain that to me in class. Thank you very much. I'll continue in another file.